Well, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. World leaders are pledging to keep up the fight against global warming as U.S. President Donald Trump announces he's pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord.
I am fighting every day for the great people of this country. Therefore, in order to fulfill my solemn duty to protect America and its citizens, the United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord.
The European Union's top climate official says Trump's decision made it a sad day for the global community.
The decision by the United States to withdraw from the Paris Agreement on climate change is a major disappointment for global efforts to reduce greenhouse gas emissions and promote international security. The Paris Agreement was adopted by all the world's nations in 2015 because they recognized the immense harm that climate change is already causing and the enormous opportunity that climate action represents.
The push to use cleaner forms of energy is unlikely to slow down. Around the world, governments and private companies are investing billions in clean energy. President Trump is keeping the U.S. Embassy in Israel in Tel Aviv, even while promising eventually to move it to Jerusalem. Trump, in his long campaign for the presidency, vowed to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, but the issue is caught in the unending debate over the creation of separate Jewish and Palestinian states, with both claiming Jerusalem as their capitals. You're listening to VOA. U.S. authorities are investigating two apparent racially charged incidents, including the hanging of a noose inside the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History in Washington. The noose is symbolic of lynching of African Americans by white mobs decades ago. In the state of California, African American basketball superstar LeBron James reacted to the vandals writing a racial slur on his Los Angeles home.
No matter how famous you are, no matter how many people admire you, being black in America is tough, and we got a long way to go.
James says wealth will not insulate you from bigotry. A gunman stormed a mall casino in the Philippines, torching gambling tables and stuffed a backpack with casino chips before fleeing. He was later found dead of an apparent suicide Friday. The attack sent hundreds fleeing outside the resort's World Manila. Authorities suspect the motive was robbery. More than 70 people suffered mostly minor injuries in a stampede to escape. School's out in the United States, and that means more millennials are looking for work. Several million new college graduates have entered the job market over the past 2 months. VOA visited commencements across the country to talk to those graduates. VOA's Carolyn Prasuti reports.
A trim here, a press there. 4 years of studying leading up to one moment. Graduation.
I'm excited, but also it's scary and nerve-wracking.
What will you give back?
Commencement speakers did their best to calm those fears and to inspire confidence.
Remember this, nothing worth doing ever came easy.
Think big, not small.
Our democracy is at its best when we serve.
Across the country, 3 million are graduating. According to CareerBuilder.com, they'll enter the best job market in 10 years. Carolyn Prasuti.
Thank you. Fight on.
VOA News.
President Trump, who blasted Hillary Clinton for using a personal email server, might be a walking magnet for eavesdropping and malware if he's using an unsecured cell phone to chat with foreign leaders. Trump has been handing out his cell phone number to counterparts around the world, urging them to call him directly to avoid the red tape of diplomatic communications. In today's world of cyber espionage, cell phone security experts say such a policy is not only unorthodox, but dangerous. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, the second day of June, and here are some of the stories we are covering. As the African Union seeks alternatives to the International Criminal Court, human rights groups are warning against a proposed immunity for sitting heads of state.
If the president commits serious crime, he will not want to vacate office. He then creates patronage within the people that are around them or him for them to continuously stay in power so that they avoid getting out of office.
Ngabuto Mabenda is a Zimbabwean politician. More protests are planned to demand Guinea-Bissau President Jose Mari Vaz steps down. Prospective voters in the Kingdom of Lesotho are worried about the possibility of violence during Saturday's election. And a Gambian court declares unconstitutional the country's notorious sedition law.
We are elated in light of the fact that we felt that this law is a law that was used by the Jammeh administration to stifle freedom of expression as well as narrow the democratic space.
Emile Toure is the president of the Gambia Press Union, and South Sudanese refugees in Uganda say they are going hungry after the WFP cut their monthly rations of maize and sorghum. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's post in our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Should African heads of state have immunity from international prosecution? It is a question that has fueled resistance in Africa to the International Criminal Court for years and continues to stir debate on the continent. Sophia Christensen reports from Dakar, where human rights groups from around Africa gather to discuss the issue.
Human rights groups see two pivotal moments in the mountain of resistance to the International Criminal Court in Africa. Both involve the indictments of sitting heads of state.
And if you look at the history of the pushback against the ICC by the African Union, it dates back to the time when arrest warrants was issued against Omar al-Bashir and then subsequently on the Kenyan officials as well.
Netsanet Belay is the Africa Director of Research and Advocacy for Amnesty International.
We believe that there's no legal normative basis to support the immunity of serving head of state and governments, especially when it comes to such crimes as crimes against humanity.
The cases against Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta and his Vice President William Ruto in relation to the 2007-2008 post-election violence were dropped for lack of evidence in 2014 and 2016. Kenyatta is running for re-election this year. The Sudanese president remains in office as well. Since 2009, when Bashir's international arrest warrant was issued, he has visited at least 18 countries, 11 of them in Africa. He was charged with genocide, war crimes, and crimes against humanity in connection with the conflict in Darfur. Prosecuting sitting heads of state is complex, with some arguing it undermines stability. Andile Nkitama is leader of the advocacy group Black First, Land First in South Africa.
If for stability and progress we need to forgive those who transgress against us amongst ourselves, we'll do so. We should not put ourselves in a position where Europe says we must attack everyone of us, and we do so even in a context where maybe rather dialogue, reconciliation is a better proposition than putting people on trial or going after them and so on.
South Africa was among the three African countries that said last year they would withdraw from the ICC. Critics say the ICC unfairly targets African. All 39 of the people indicted since the court's establishment in 2002 have been African. As resistance has grown, the continent has sought to create its own alternatives to the ICC. The current option on the table is the African Court of Justice and Human Rights. In 2014, African Union heads of state adopted what is called the Malabo Protocol to extend the court's jurisdiction to include an international criminal law section. The protocol also gives immunity to sitting heads of state. For that and other reasons, rights groups have urged African countries not to ratify the protocol. Stella Ndirangu is program manager for the International Commission of Jurists in Kenya.
With the African court, it means with this immunity clause, you can't have a real-time response. You have to wait until this individual is not in office to even commence any type of prosecutions against him.
And for Zimbabwean politician Ngabuto Mabena, that could push African leaders to cling to power, even more than some already do.
If the president commits serious crime, he will not want to vacate office. He then creates patronage within the people that are around them or him for them to continuously stay in power so that they avoid getting out of office.
So far, 9 African countries have signed the Malabo Protocol. but no country's parliament has ratified it. The protocol won't enter into force unless 15 AU member countries ratify it. Sophia Christensen for VOA News, Dakar.
The Gambian Constitutional Court on Thursday ruled that the country's notorious law on sedition and false news is unconstitutional. Aseni Mariner reports from Banjul. Journalists and press freedom advocates have welcomed the move.
The Gambia Press Union has sued Gambia government to declare sedition and false news as unconstitutional since the days of the former regime of Yahya Jammeh in 2015. Jammeh deliberately refused to impanel the Supreme Court to hear the case and many others that border on civil liberties. Our concession is only on sedition right now. We are partially withdrawing because we have to review the case on false news. I wish this matter was resolved in a way different from litigation, Gambia's Justice Minister Abubakar Tambedu said at the Supreme Court sitting in Banjul. The minister said the new government has made a public commitment to respect and uphold the fundamental human right of every person, particularly has enshrined in Section 18 to 33, including Section 25, which guarantee freedom of speech, assembly, associate and consign and movement. This means that Gambia government has accepted that sedition, which is a colonial law in the Gambia status book, is unconstitutional. Emil Toure is the president of the Gambia Press Union.
I think this is a victory for democracy, human rights, and the rule of law. We are elated in light of the fact that we felt that this law is a law that was used by the Jammeh administration to stifle freedom of expression as well as narrow the democratic space. But this intervention by the Attorney General and Minister of Justice, Honorable Ba Tambedu, by conceding to our petition that the law on sedition is unconstitutional, is, in my view, a very progressive move. And I feel this would go a long way in helping the Gambia in its transition to multi-party democracy, because what we had here was not truly multi-party democracy, because if you could recall, Jammeh kept on amending the laws to suit him.
Sekou Jammeh is a well-respected Gambian journalist and former editor of the Close Daily newspaper, and he believes it is an important milestone in press freedom in the Gambia.
It is a very important milestone for the campaign for press freedom in the Gambia. What the Attorney General has said, and the Attorney General is supposed to be in opposition of this legal suit, but what he has said and conceded gives us all indications that the law of sedition had been used many times before by the politicians against journalists, against the opposition, against anyone that they perceive to be critical of the government.
The Gambia Press Union is challenging the constitutionality of two major unfriendly laws to the media, which are sedition and false publication and broadcasting. They are also challenging constitutionality of false publication on internet, a new digital law which limits or makes it impossible to criticize public officials. Reporting for VOA News in Banjul, I am Seni M.K. Mariner.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today's Friday, June 2nd, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Voters in the Kingdom of Lesotho say they are concerned about the possibility of violence during Saturday's election. Their fears follow rumors that the army could stage a coup to remove Prime Minister Pakalita Musisili's government. But senior officials of the military have rejected the rumors as unfounded. Lesotho will hold its third election in 5 years after Prime Minister Musisili lost a no-confidence vote and subsequently dissolved parliament. Opposition groups have accused the administration in Maseru of a plot to rig the election. Independent political analyst Professor Francis Makowa tells viewers Peter Clotty that the voters' fears are justified following recent security challenges blamed on rogue elements in the state security establishment.
They are justified. Remember, Lesotho has not resolved the problem of security up to now. Solely as you are suspected of committing heinous crimes like murders and others, where the command at the head of the government has refused to hand over those people for further investigation and to hold them to account. This is the problem. Now, recently we have had a spate of kidnapping, allegedly by the security forces and the police, of suspected anti-government activists and torture of these people. And this they have not alleged apparently because even now, intimidations are still reported from the private media in particular of these people going around and intimidating people, simply harassing members of the opposition.
The military officials have denied allegations or rumors of a possible coup before the elections. What are you hearing on the ground?
We are hearing nothing since that refutal of the allegations by the army father. But those were the rumors that went around a few weeks ago that the army might stage a coup. What is suspected is that the army is planning to engage in acts of violence that would ultimately lead to the nullification of the elections and the declaration of the state of emergency, therefore extending the term of office for the current prime minister and his government. This is what had been suspected. And I'm sure those suspicions are still hanging around. We have an army which is not accountable, and an army, the government of the day, is not willing to make it, hold it to account.
Some opposition political parties are accusing the Pakadita Mosesidi administration of trying or influencing the Electoral Commission to rig the vote on its behalf. Do they have any truth to these allegations?
Well, the truth is not easy to establish in this regard. Political parties will always make allegations, much as the government is also making allegations against political parties that they want to tarnish the image of the government by making this kind of allegations. So that one is hard to establish. As far as I am concerned, really, I don't see how the government can rig the elections, because right now we understand even the ballot papers are already here. All political parties that are registered for elections are working closely, including the governing parties, are working closely with the Electoral Commission, so that the chances of rigging elections are very slim. Already we have the international observer teams in the country, and many of them for that matter, including the SADC, that is seized with the problems of Lesotho, and indeed is still helping Lesotho even to conduct these elections themselves. So the country is awash with all these people who are witnessing and observing this election. So the rigging, if any attempt at rigging is done, is going to be very difficult indeed. I myself would not readily buy into the argument that the government wants to rig elections. Of course, they may want to rig the elections, but the process itself appears to be well guarded against any direct rigging.
Professor Francis Makoa is an independent political analyst in the Kingdom of Lesotho. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Maseru. More protests are planned to demand Guinea-Bissau President José Mario Vaz step down. Carlos de Silva is the spokesman for the local group Movement of Conscience and Nonconformist Citizens. He tells Ricky Shryak that President Vaz is unable to properly manage the country amid the ongoing political crisis.
Yeah, we're going to protest again because we say that we cannot stop, they cannot stop us until justice and democracy is being fulfilled in the country. And therefore, 2 days after that scenario, we went again in the presidential palace. We did a silence protest. We are planning again to do the next protest. So it's supposed to be on this Saturday, but we are fitting for the new strategy, because our target is to reach the presidential palace. And therefore, this coming Saturday, we're going to do a meeting in a public place. We're going to call people and do a kind of debate, talk about the situation on, and make a conference press, and talk to the people what's going on in the country and why we postpone also our protest. And the protest may be after this coming Saturday, the next Saturday, we're going to do another protest.
As part of the debate, are you inviting Vaj supporters to give their case, to lay their ideas why they think Vaj should stay?
Yeah, we're inviting many, you know, there's a lot of entities who join our ideal. And even in the last process, there's a lot of entity who joined this last process. I've never taken part in a previous process, but this last one took part, as we can just to mention some, for example, the Pan-African Youth, Revolutionary Pan-African Youth, they joined our protest, and also the teachers, unions of teachers, they joined us, our protest, because you see, in this is 2 weeks without school, there's strike, two weeks already. And the teachers, they took also the part in our last protest, and some also party, like the main party, PIGC, they took part also in our protest. And there's a lot of entity who took the part in the last protest. And we're going to join by then also in this coming Sunday. We're going to hold a big debate. We invite all the people, youth from different areas.
What is the status of the sanctions that ECOWAS said would be put in place?
See, now the president and nobody did something to solve the problem. Even the president, in the last open presidential, he said publicly that he wouldn't put down this government until they open the National Assembly.
Carlos De Silva is the spokesman for the group Movement of Conscience and Nonconformist Citizens in Guinea-Bissau. He was speaking with Ricky Stryak from the capital, Bissau. South Sudanese refugees in the Bidibidi camp in Uganda's West Nile region say they are going hungry after the UN World Food Program cut their monthly rations of maize and sorghum. They also say the delivery of cooking oil and other items is often delayed. A Ugandan official says aid agencies cut food rations because they are overwhelmed by the number of refugees. Tito Justin recently visited the Bidibidi camp and has this report from Juba.
Bidibidi settlement camp has become the world's largest refugee camp, hosting more than about 350,000 refugees. Most of the refugees at the camp were displaced from former Central Equatorial State. Others fled violence in the former Western and Eastern Equatorial States. Betty Ropani and her family of 11 fled Yei Town last November to escape hunger and insecurity. She says men in military uniform blocked roads and she could not access the crops growing on her farm. Ropani says she does not receive enough food for her family, but it would help if the UN distributed ready-made flour instead of grains. Speaking in her native Kakwa language, she says, after the UN's World Food Program's last food ratios to 12 kilograms per person, South Sudanese refugees began going hungry.
They reduced from 14 kilograms to 12 kilograms per person in a month. So in this family, it's not enough.
Refugee Viola Aputu, who also fled Yei Town last year, says when she and 8 family members arrived in Bidibidi, the food the UN provided was enough for the refugees, but not anymore.
The food cannot reach at the end of the month, and we are 8 in the family. With this population of the family, it gives us hard times to get a substitute food. If you don't struggle, you will not get.
Aputu says she earns a little money for buying food by working for families of the host communities. Another refugee, Agele Enos, fled Morobo County last year. Enos wishes there was enough land in Bidibidi so he could farm and produce his own food to supplement the relief food. He says he also worries about his kids' education.
We have decided, I personally have decided, that if it has been reduced to 6, I have to really go back to South Sudan and suffer in my own land.
Uganda's Office of the Prime Minister, or OPM, is responsible for refugee affairs in Uganda. Solomon Osakan is the OPM's refugee desk officer in West Nile. Osakan confirms the WFP's last food ratios and there are often delays in delivering food to the refugees, but says aid agencies' resources are stretched thin by the sheer numbers of refugees arriving each day from South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
It's 25 minutes past the hour. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the FIFA Under-20 World Cup holding in South Korea,
where the junior Teranga Lions of Senegal were knocked out of the World Cup by Mexico. Substitute Ronaldo Cisneros came off the bench to score the only goal in the match to give Mexico the 1-0 victory over 10-man Senegal in the round of 16 at the FIFA Under-20 World Cup Korea Republic 2017. On Wednesday, Zambia survived a heart-stopping encounter to see off Germany 4-3 after extra time to progress to their first FIFA Under-20 World Cup quarterfinal on Wednesday. My colleague James Butty spoke with Andrew Kamanga, president of the Football Association of Zambia, on the team's upcoming encounter with Italy on Monday.
We've made a bit of history in that it's the first time the country has reached the quarterfinal stage of this particular tournament. Obviously, the expectation is that they could still go far. We are facing Italy on Monday next week. But I think our credentials are speaking for themselves, and we've lived up to the billing of the true champion. And we are the only one of the four teams from Africa still in contention. So we've made the final top eight in the world, which by any standard is something to be proud of.
It sounds like a new day in Southern African football with the dominance of Zambia.
Yes, at this level, I think we've dominated, and we hope that we can replicate this same standard at the senior national team level.
We stay with FIFA as the Football World Governing Body on Thursday released the latest FIFA ranking. Egypt national team dropped one position from the 19th place to the 20th position with 903 points, but remained on top of the African rankings for the fifth consecutive month. Egypt is closely followed by Senegal, who is second in Africa but 27 in the world with 839 points after they moved up three spots. Cameroon also moved up one spot and is now in the 32nd place in the world ranking with 811 points, but third in Africa. Nigeria is in the fourth position, while DR Congo wraps up the top five. Brazil maintained its number one spot in the world, followed by Argentina in second. Germany occupies the third position. Chile is in fourth, while Colombia wraps up the top five. We now turn our attention to the CAF Confederations Cup, as eight matches have been slated to take place across various venues on the continent this weekend, starting from today, where Mbabane Swallows of Swaziland will host MC Alger of Algeria, while FCUS Rabat of Morocco will host Club African of Tunisia. On Saturday, Egyptian side Samoa are targeting back-to-back victories at their backyard when they entertain Sudanese counterparts Al-Hilal El Obeid in a Group C Day 3 clash in Alexandria. Still on Saturday, Rivers United of Nigeria will travel to Uganda to confront KCC CA, while CF Monana of Gabon will host Horoya of Guinea. On Sunday, TP Mazembe of DR Congo will face SuperSports United of South Africa, as Zesco United of Zambia will be hoping for a win against Recreativo de Lobolo of Angola. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, June 2nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. Join us again Monday morning for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post-editor Samson Omale, along with our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Golden oldies, classics, hot new jams, promising newcomers. That's what's up this week on Music Time in Africa. You'll hear awesome tunes from Malawi, Zimbabwe, Mozambique, Mali, Guinea, Ghana, and Nigeria. Plus, newsflash, South African Music Awards. It happened May 27th, so get your update and find out who came out on top. Don't miss it, peeps. Stay cool, stay current, and stay connected to Music Time in Africa.
Tune in this Sunday and the following Saturday at 15 and 2000 UTC. Yow!